This is Lawrence Hillman, November 9th, 2012. Beyond 2012, the astrological zeitgeist of now.
And so just a little bit of background to introduce Lawrence Hillman. He was born and raised in Zurich, Switzerland, and he began to study astrology at the age of 16, and it's been a passion of his for over 30 years. He's a full-time astrologer specializing in helping his clients understand the deeper purpose of life's calling, especially in these trying times. Lawrence plays a critical role in the ongoing movement of to merge astrology with depth psychology, and that's why we're all here as a Jungian group, to look at the depth psychological aspects of things. He is the author of two books, which are available for sale here, Planets in Play and Alignments, How to Live in Harmony with the Universe. So we have them in the library to check out, well, just a couple copies, and then a few copies here for sale. So I'd like to welcome Lawrence Hillman.
When I do these kind of things, I don't have a written text. I talk from slides. I talk freely. I'm happy if you have questions to stop. If it's not appropriate at that time or I'm coming to it later, I will let you know. But it's a pretty open forum. It's not a red prescription sort of event. So as somebody mentioned, these are difficult times, as the introductory person. it doesn't take much, and just if we just go back a little bit, to some of the very recent events. This is New York City about a week ago. This is last summer in Colorado. This was in our own state, Missouri, where a whole town was literally just wiped off the face of the earth. And these kind of things, it's not hard to freak out this time. And it doesn't, help that we get these kind of, headlines. I'm moving this over here so we're not too lean. I want to talk a little about this notion of, end of the world fantasy. This is an old idea. I'm just mentioning a few people who predicted the end of the world. Last time I checked Wikipedia, I think they have a list of 458 or something like that. These are some of the more famous ones. Martin Luther said the world, obviously Noah's Ark was an end of the world fantasy, but Martin Luther said the world would come to an end exactly in 1600. Christopher Columbus, many don't know that, said the world would come to an end in 1658. I don't know where he got the number. Pat Robertson, of course, said 1982, and then that didn't happen, so then he revised it to 2007. And very famously, Harold Camping, the guy from last year, said the world would end in May, and then he didn't, so revised it to October, and then we haven't heard from him since. So there are these, it's a repeated theme to me, and we can, that's why you came to hear we're going to be here on December 22nd. The answer is yes, and you can go home if you want. But, the Mayan calendar, to me, is much more. There's two pieces to the Mayan calendar story. The one part is the actual story of the Mayan calendar that ends there. My simple answer is the reason it ends there is because they ran out of stone, and I really mean that. And I understand, and I have studied, I'm not an expert in the Mayan calendar system, but I do know that it's a cyclical system, which means the cycles, they just didn't talk about what happened to the next cycle, but there is a next cycle. So, to me, what's more interesting is not the phenomenon of the Mayan calendar, but the phenomenon of the end-of-world fantasy that goes with it. And why do we all... How many remember 1999 in December, when the world was going to end? My sister was stocking up, gallons of water and freaking out in batteries, and it was going to end. And you better do this, you better do that. It's like we have a need for that because it helps us not deal with whatever else we're really supposed to be dealing with. So it's much easier to say, well, what's the point? I'm going to, When this guy was talking last year, I was listening to NPR, and I was listening to this young couple living in Florida with a young child. They both quit their jobs, were basically sitting in an apartment waiting for, the end. And, people really are weird. And one of the things you will notice, if you look at the history, and I'm going to get into this a little more deeply, but what you notice is that if you look at more carefully at that list I was mentioning on Wikipedia, you will see that maybe 80 or 90% of them are basically what I would call religious nuts. So there's a religious component to this that goes back to the Noah's Ark fantasy that you know, and of course in the Christian tradition that, and it's not just the Christian tradition, but in the Christian tradition you have the notion of rapture and you have the notion of being taken to heaven and being the chosen ones, and you know, that he was talking about 3% of the world would survive and the others would all go to hell, you know, these kind of things. So that thinking, to me, is what's interesting with the Mayan calendar phenomenon. From a strict astrological perspective in my world of astrology, you know, that's the chart for December 21st. There's nothing I can see that says it's going to be over. So it's just, to me, it's a non-event. It's a different system, just like the Hindu astrological system is different. So I'm not going to dwell on this very long because I'm much more interested in why now and what is going on now, because clearly we live in unusual times. So what I have coined these times is what I call the trident of now. Let's see if I can focus this more. Not really. And what I mean with the trident of now is that there are three main things going on. And they are different in scale. The first one is the largest one, the age shift. And I'm going to go into these in detail. That's what this evening is about, is talking about these three phenomena that are all going on at the same time right now. The shifting of the ages is going on right now. And I will talk about that, what that means. What it means, you know, the hair song, this is the dawning of the age of Aquarius. What does that really mean? We're going to talk about that in detail. The other thing that is unusual that is going on is Pluto moved into Capricorn in January of 2008. Last time that happened was in 1770-something. I have it written down when I get to that page. What year? I don't remember years, but something like that. So it's a long time ago. That's a rare event. And the other thing is outer planet transit, which is the most immediate and what changes and shifts the most. So this is a rare thing. This is a very rare thing. This is like every several thousand years. This is every couple hundred years. And this is current and all the time. So we're going to go through that, these phases, to understand when you put all that together and everything that's happening at the same time, that makes a lot of sense to me why what's happening is happening. And we can also have a better understanding. And there is this notion that if you understand why things are going the way they're going, that you can take it better because you understand it. If you don't understand it, it freaks you out. If you understand it, like, okay, well, that makes sense. I don't get freaked out by things that I'm like, oh, okay, well, that makes perfect sense in this context. This will explain pretty much anything you see in the news. It really will. So, okay, so the age of Aquarius, what does that mean? We have to understand that the sun has three different cycles. The first cycle of the sun is called the diurnal one, which basically means the sun goes up in the morning when you have your coffee and it goes down in the evening when you're driving home. That's the diurnal cycle, the 24-hour cycle of the sun. It's basically based on the Earth's rotation, but we think of it as the sun going up and the sun going down. The second one is the annual cycle of the sun, which is the sun going through the zodiac as seen from the Earth. And that is which you could best, but I'm going to show pictures for that too. And the third one is the precession. I'm going to go through these three. So the first one is again the sun, not the sun going down in the day. The solar cycle is why we celebrate birthdays. The sun comes back to the same place it was when you were born on the zodiac. And for instance, if you're standing in Stonehenge, the sun will come exactly to the same slot between two stones exactly at the same time every year because it's done one rotation around the apparent path that it takes around us, even though, of course, we're going around it. It looks to us as though we're going around, as though the sun goes around us on the eclipse. And then finally, the last one is a little bit more complicated to understand, and that is that the Earth, as it rotates, is not on a straight axis. It actually wobbles the way this gyroscope would. So that's just gyroscope turning. You might have done that in physics at some point. And so the Earth actually has a movement. The top, the north pole of the Earth, doesn't stand still. It moves in a larger circle. One rotation of that is about 26,000 years. It's very slow. So it's not like that's where the 26,000 years comes from. And so if we all we have out here now is we have, again, if we're on the Earth, the sun makes a path in the heavens, and that's called the ecliptic, the path of the sun, and it goes through the 12 signs of the zodiac, which are just star constellations. And so that's all I'm showing out here is this belt, we call the zodiac belt. And so what happens is that because of this precession, if we look where the sun is on the first day of spring, just because we have to somehow, you know, localize it in the sky, if we look at the first day of spring, the spring equinox, when the day is the same length as the night, then the place in the sky that we look at that point is going backwards in time 26,000 years ago around once. And so in about, we divide that into 12 signs, about every 2,000 years or so, 26 divided into 12, about every 2,000 years or so, we shift one sign. So right now we're shifting from Pisces to Aquarius. This seems to be moving because it goes that way. So we're moving from here to here. We're shifting from the sign of Pisces to the sign of Aquarius. That's the shift. Now you might say, well, wait a minute, this is not exact science. 26,000, you know, divided by 12 and so forth, and when exactly is this point and so forth. A couple of issues with that. First of all, it's an age, and an age dawns. So when is it dawn? When you see the first rays of the sun, or when the sun is above the horizon? We could argue that. So there are astrologers that say, you know, this the age of Aquarius started 100 years ago, some say it's going to start in 500 years. There's a huge spread there. Instead of making those arguments and getting into those fights, what I do is I look at the phenomenon of what's actually happening. I'm going to show you things that are going on in the world that are so incredibly Aquarian, there's no way they belong to the age of Pisces. So to me, it's a phenomenon that we're in. We're in the early steps. If I was to give you an era when it started, I would say sort of maybe mid-20th century. Because of some of the things that were happening that were distinctly and uniquely Aquarian. We'll get to what that means. By the end of tonight, I want you to know what this shift is about very well. You really understand what Pisces was about and what Aquarius is about. And we're also not totally out of Pisces yet. There's still a lot of Piscean stuff going on. And there's so we're sort of in the middle. Maybe we want to put in each. We're taking baby steps. It's new. We don't understand. All those things are going on. And I'm going to talk about that. But that's what the precession means, and that's what the shifting of the ages means. Everybody got that? Right. So again, we're moving from Pisces to Aquarius. Those are the symbols for the signs. Now, for the next piece, we have to understand this term rulership. And I'm throwing out a little bit of astrology here for those of you who don't know what that is. I have cheat sheets galore on my website you can download with all of this stuff on it. So you don't have to write everything down. But basically, what we say in astrology is that every we always come back to the planets. The planets are alive in my way of thinking. The planets are the live archetypes. The signs are the way I look at the world, which is how I write about it in the planets play when I do readings, is that it's a theater. The signs are basically the clothing that these actors in the sky are wearing. So clothing is not alive, and so the signs really have no energy. But we can know what energy, let's say Cancer or Leo or Virgo has by the planet, which is alive, that rules it. So we always come back to planets, because planets are alive. Planets rule signs and they rule houses. We're not going to talk about houses here, but we do need to know rulership. Therefore, when I say Pisces, because Pisces is ruled by Neptune, I'm really saying Neptune. And when I say Aquarius, because Aquarius is ruled by Uranus, I'm really saying Uranus. That's all you have to get out of this chart. Therefore, when I say the shift is going from Pisces to Aquarius, I'm really saying, on an archetypal level, it's going from Neptunian to Uranian. Does everybody get that? If you get that out of tonight, you've got it. That's the most important thing I'm saying. And we're going to explain this and go through this many times, but that's the key concept. Is that Piscean to Aquarian is really Neptunian to Uranian. What does that mean? We have to understand those are the archetypes. All right. So what does it mean? Well, to show it and to explain it, I'm going to show you a few slideshows. I've made slideshows for all 10 of the planets that are on my website. And rather than try to explain it, I think the slideshows will do a better job. That's why I made them, and we are going to use those tomorrow, all 10 of them, for this green workshop. But just to show these real quick, let me see if I can get this going. again to this idea. So what is this shift? Pisces, Neptune is what we know. One of the visualizations that I use for this is that if you think about structures that we know and are familiar with for the last, let's say, 2,000 years or so, pretty much everything that we know has been pyramidal. To start with the most famous over the 2,000 years, you have one pope, you know, down to people in the pews. You have one general in an army, you have one CEO, you have one super at a school. These kind of things. We're used to having a top-down structure of a pyramid. That is a very Piscean model. And it's also very monotheistic, father, paternal, all of that belongs there too. So it makes sense to me that it comes in the era that is also known as the Christian era, the 2,000 years AD. So I'm curious for suggestions. Any ideas? Okay. Upside down? Okay, that's one idea. What else?
Circle.
Spiral. Crystalline with lots of different points to connect
it. You got it. 10 points for Gryffindor. We're talking decentralized, we're talking network, we're talking no focal point. This is what's called a matrix, a three-dimensional matrix as a model. And let me show you some examples of where this is used. In your cell phone. The cell phone uses this method. It's a redundant system. If this point goes down, you can still make a phone call, because instead of going from here to here, it can just go like that. So there are umpteen systems like this out there now. That's how computers work, that's how networks work, that's how your brain works, exactly. So some part of your brain dies and so forth. So this is actually quite a natural way. It's also a democratic way because there is no center. This is not all good. There's no good or bad, in my view, of the world of astrology and understanding things. Because another system that uses this is, for instance, Al-Qaeda. You know, if it's an idea and you have cells, you can take out one cell, but you're not going to get rid of the system, which is based, let's say, on an idea. So even if we took Bin Laden out, which we did, there's still the network idea. So it's sort of a headless monster in a way, if you look at it from the negative perspective, but it is a system that we are now dealing with in just about everything. Everything is networked, people are networked, companies are networked, and so on. And it's no longer, there was a wonderful article, I had it somewhere, but it's not, we don't have time tonight, but there was an article written by Tom Friedman when he came actually to St. Louis, and he met a company, he was doing a speech there, he met this company, and he was talking about how this is the company of the future in his mind. And he was saying that the CEO was from, I don't know, South America. You know, the main research was being done in Spain. The prototype was being built in Israel, and so forth. There were like 10 different countries involved with people everywhere. And he said, and the headquarters were basically in the CEO's BlackBerry. That's the Iranian company. And if you look at structures in company and what works and doesn't work, what I also do is I also coach. I coach organizations and companies. And those companies that are able to translate that into that are the ones that are, in my mind, going to not only survive, but do well and far outperform those companies because that structure no longer works. A lot of companies are still doing that, let's be clear. This is not happening, you know, overnight. It may take another 100 years. It may take another 500 years or 1,000 years until the Aquarian Age is fully here. But we're clearly seeing, sort of, you want to be with it, you want to be hip, you want to be there, all those things. This is the shape you have to be aware of if you're a modern leader, because this is happening. Small, nimble, connected, you know, these kind of things. It's a very different model.
Do you see any reaction against the network models?
Yes, of course. There's a lot of people who have a lot of vested interest in that. You know, you can do this, 1%, 99%. You can do all kinds of models with that. But I don't so much judge as I observe. So do I have opinions about it? Do I like it or not like it? It's not even so interesting to me as the question, this is what's happening, what am I going to do to adapt? It's like saying, well, everything's getting warmer. Gee, I'm still going to wear the same clothes I always wore, so I'm just going to sweat because I don't want to make a change. This is just my observation of reality. So the question is more, okay, what do we do if you want to be part of this world. A lot of people don't want to be part of this world. A lot of people are checking out because they don't want to be part of this world. And there's different ways to check out. But to me, that's that reality. The classic, I went to business school, and the classic example they use in business school is the guy who made the buggy whips. You know, made the whips for the buggies of the guys who were doing the horse and carriage. So one day, someone invented a car. Suddenly, buggy whips were no longer, you know, desirable. Maybe you can think of the people who make the phone booths. They're really not necessary anymore. So there is, this is real change that is really happening, but I'm talking on a much bigger scale, on a global scale, understanding a lot of phenomena that didn't make sense before suddenly make sense here. That's the idea. So we can talk about it, if we like it or not, that's a different question. But right now, I just want to observe first. This is one of my absolutely favorite examples of what I'm talking about. How many of you saw the Beijing Olympic opening in 2008? An amazing event. And so you saw one of the things they did was because they invented printing in China. They had this thing. These were boxes. These are people. So these were boxes that were about this big and maybe yay high. And they moved. They made waves. They made letters together. It's almost like a digital screen where each one of these things is a pixel. If you can imagine that. So they could make, you know, shapes and forms, anything they wanted to write, they could write with this. And I have, you know, an engineering background, and I was really curious because this thing was moving really fast. It's like, this is an amazing system. I really want to know the technology behind this. And when they were done, when they were finished with their whole movements, they showed it. I have no idea how to communicate with each other, but what this shows is that we're all in this together. Each person there matters tremendously. Because if one person, if you've ever had a screen that you just bought a nice new screen on a computer and one pixel is off, you know how irritating that is? Imagine if one of these guys and everybody's going down and he's still up. You know, for, I don't know, 3 billion people to see. It's kind of irritating. So, notable. So what this says to me, everyone, one with a capital O, matters in this new system because we're all part of the whole. And we are each responsible to be part of the whole in a way that in the past maybe we weren't. Because the old model also that is being taught and is still in a lot of people's minds is that people are just replaceable. People are part of the machinery. The Adam Smith model of business. And so, you know, we have this equipment and we have these people, and if this equipment is broken, we get new equipment. If this person isn't working for us, we get a new person. In a system like this, it's not that simple. It's a much more complex, and therefore honors the individual more, despite the fact that we're all in together. Now, in this model, you can also see this interesting phenomenon of being like everyone else, but yet being different. This is one of the most difficult things to understand, and I'm still grappling with this, having, you know, looked at this stuff for 35 years. The Iranian archetype is complex because it incorporates at the same time difference, how we're different from everybody, an individual, and at the same time, how we are the same. And this is a good idea about that. So there's not a simple answer for it, but one of the ways you might think about it or begin to think about it is, you know, who is my group and how do I fit in within that group? That's the sameness, but also that my identity is with that, through that group. And we're all in a group. Even if you're a hermit, you're in the group of hermits. They're just spread out. They're a network. So here are some key words, and these are straight off my cheat sheets on my website. You can get them. The key words for the planet. So for Neptune, you know, mystical, imaginative, dreamy, otherworldly. This is what I translated in the slideshow. You know, impractical, vague, lost, mesmerized, religious, compassionate, escapist, magical, fantasy, drug, belief, undecided, mystery, isolation, invisibility. And what you see what I do there is that I mix, I don't believe in good or bad planets. I don't do that. You have words there that you might want, words there you might not want. So a strongly Neptunian person, someone with a lot of this energy in their chart, can be, you know, a druggie and can be a very, very spiritual person. Astrologically, there's no difference. There's, of course, a difference in the person, but that's based on all kinds of other things we don't have time to get into here. But it's both, it's a phenomenon that is presenting itself as a Neptunian archetype, if I see that in a person or in the chart. So then I'm looking for the Neptunian manifestation when I see a strong Neptune, which can be one, you know, anywhere on that scale. Shift, very different. Inventive, free, honest, friendly, loyal, radical, impersonal, tolerant, scientific, self-righteous, rebellious, independent, global, equal, universal, revolutionary network, uplinking space flight. A couple of words for you again on my website if you want them. It starts to give you, help you on different levels, seeing, hearing, looking, getting words for different ways of learning, just to get this language. So one of the questions people ask is, you were sort of maybe implying, but do I like it or not, is, you know, how do I fit into this new age? Do I even belong there? But one of the things you'll know is that it's really not an age issue. Personally, you would say, well, you know, if you're young, then you're in it. If you're older, that's not true. I know tech is in their 80s. And I know, well, most young people are pretty much in it because they grow up in it. But the way you practically answer the question, you can look at your chart, and you can ask yourself the simple question, how Aquarian / Uranian is my chart? There's ways to read that. And those people who are very Uranian or Aquarian are already there. That's how they're like, okay, finally the rest of the world is catching up with me. I've been there all my life. There are those people, and you probably know them. You just saw the slideshow. These people, you know. And then, or the 11th house, now we're into houses, belongs to Aquarius Uranus as well, so people with a very strong 11th house can also, you know, feel more comfortable with the Aquarian age, if you want, or with this new Uranian model. And another question, how willing am I to change? Because we are all changing. And, you know, even just in the last... I mean, we were all there when there was no internet. It's hard to remember that. And how our lives have changed since smartphones and so forth. It's just, it's amazing. And a big part of our brain has not even slightly caught up with all of that yet. And we look at our kids and they're like, they're so, you know, you don't even get them. I don't even know what they're doing. And, you know, and I use this sort of tongue-in-cheek, got cell phone, because I know people, I have some clients who just, you know, is like, well, I'm not doing any of that technology stuff, that's not for me, you know, I like to write handwritten letters, that's wonderful. But the bottom line is you're the, you know, it's great to write handwritten letters, but some people say, well, I'm not going to get an email, they're going to exclude themselves from a big part of today's reality. So I would say, even if it's new and even if it's different, you know, find a way. There's lots of ways today that you can get involved in, you know, the space age, the science age, the technological age, whatever you want to call it, the new age. And to me, it's common sense. If you want to be part of what's happening, if that's an interest to you, then some of it means you have to get comfortable with some of the new technology and some of the new ways that people are getting together. By the way, another great network example is Obama's campaign, both times, 08 and now, where most of the money came from, you know, $25 and less donations. That's a very new model. The top-down model is where, you know, some rich people buy the election, basically, is a pyramid. So that's another model. And there's plenty of them. You know, as you get these ideas, maybe as you go through the next couple of weeks, you'll start seeing them everywhere. It's really quite common. Two readings, if you're interested. Starfish and the Spider is one of my favorite books from a business perspective. This was written, I think, in 05, so it's a few years old already, but it's very relevant. Two Stanford MBAs wrote a book about starfish, basically the model of the Iranian model. It's if you cut a starfish's arm off, the arm piece will grow into starfish. So the model that it's sort of an endless, it's almost like... In Fantasia, you know, when Mickey cuts the broom, right? So, and the spider, of course, is totally centralized. You take the spider out of the net, and it's over. So they talk in a completely non-astrological way. So it's a great book to give to business people. They talk about companies and businesses and how they do well or how they don't do well and how this new model is emerging in the world. They're just observing a phenomenon, describing it in very well-written terms. It's a great book for people who have nothing to do with astrology, or even if you are interested in astrology, but it describes it very well in real, simple to understand, and practical terms of companies you know. And it says, the unstoppable power of leaderless organizations. That's what I'm talking about. And this is my caveat here, this is my best friend Ray, who wrote this book called Signs of the Times. I think it, but I'm a little biased, but I think it's the best book written on the Aquarian Age. He spent 15 years researching, it's got a lot of really good stuff in it, on all of these things that I'm talking about, what Iranian means, how it translates into symbols in the world and so forth. So this is just some reading material. This is much more astrological, but it also speaks to those who are non-astrological. And there's a lot of books in the Aquarian Age. Those are just two examples. Now, there's one more piece we want to understand. Every age, I spoke about the Piscean Age and how we're sort of leaving the Piscean Age. Every age carries in it, archetypally, an extreme strong form of its opposite. Therefore, let's say 2,000 years, have had key words and what was valued and important and good was words like saving, mystical, imaginative, vague, escapist, lost, unworldly, dreaming, key words for me for the Piscean Age is belief. Neptune is really a good way to find out about your belief in your chart. The opposite has also been true, which is this side, which is the Virgo side, the opposite of Pisces, where we have science, exact, routine, picky, earthy, skeptical, labeling, industrious, overcritical. A few words for that archetype, and what we're talking about here is basically, you know, ask Galileo about that one. You know, this fight has been going on, science versus belief, has been going on for a long time, and still goes on. Less, thankfully, now, again, as we're shifting ages, but that struggle is deeply embedded in the last 2,000 years. You know, well, can you prove it? Well, I believe it. I mean, people are still arguing that today. You know, evolution, you know, exists, it doesn't, you know, world, climate warming is happening, it's not happening. These kind of conversations are still embedded in that duality. Again, understanding this makes sense of those conversations in that context. You know where those people are coming from or talking in those terms. If we get that, then we can say logically, if we're now moving to Aquarius, and we have these words that I've just been describing, and I know what Aquarius in Iranian means, independent, unique, group, impersonal, contrary, aloof, scientific, and equal, this must also be going on in the New Age, and this is important. Because one of the things we saw is that the last 2,000 years have been very divisive when it comes to these two ideas. You know, now we're starting to talk about, well, belief and science really are the same thing, and yes, Einstein was very spiritual, and yes, we're getting these things now. But that's a pretty new idea. These are pretty new ideas. It pretty much were two different separate camps, and it still is to some extent. So, if we don't want to repeat what we did the last 2,000 years of having two camps, it would be a good idea to start to think about this early. So, what is Leo about? Leo is ruled by the Sun. So, if we talk about Uranus here as a planet, the archetype for Leo is the Sun, which is the self, the king, the ego, the me, the I am, the hero, that kind of thing. So, what we get at the same time, and this is part of what I think the gentleman in the front row was talking about, there's always a counter movement to anything that's going on. And again, that makes perfect sense for this model. So, as we are seeing a lot of that going on, as I just described with the networks and so forth, we're also seeing a lot of this. You know, how many of your parents went and found themselves? I mean, it just wasn't done. Went to therapy, you know, find out who they were, their creative selves, did the artist's way, you know, did all this stuff. That's all wonderful, wonderful Leo stuff. Did not exist. You know, did not exist. In the Piscean model, that doesn't exist. So we're also uberly concerned about moi. And that's big, you know, and star and the whole culture of heroes that we have now with either, you know, I'm thinking of the reality shows that my daughter, God forbid, loves to watch. You know, all of these people that are sort of empty shells but have stardom as their you know, pedigree. And so sports stars, movie stars, celebrities. The celebrity cult is a complete and total Leo phenomenon. They're the modern royals. Leo is the royal sign, remember? The king. So the royals of the past are now the celebrities. Same thing. So one of the questions will be, well, how do we bring this together into something new? And I've given this a lot of thought, and I was also challenged by Campbell's statement. Joseph Campbell once said that we don't have a model that doesn't include an in-group and an out-group. You know, you're either with me or against me. Classic example. In-group, out-group. So this also could inspire an in-group and an out-group. You know, you're part of my little clan, my little family, my all these things that belong to Leo, my little kingdom. Or you're part of the masses, and that creates problems. So again, people say, no, I'm not an American, I'm a Polish-American, because that involves something that has to do with this. So these things are already showing up in lots of different places, including the whole self-help industry. So I was challenged by that line from Campbell, and I thought about it a lot, and I came up with this concept that brings the two together that I call a society of kings. This, of course, is the Leo, the lion, and the Aquarius, the man. That's the image. And there's the Leo sign and the Aquarius sign. So what do I mean with that? That's the image for it, and this is the... What does that mean to me? First of all, it's not a sexist statement. This is about the king in you, the sun, the solar part of everybody. Everybody, man or woman, has a sun in them. S-O-N. I'm sorry, S-U-N. And as UN, which is the solar part of you, the sense of self, the ego, the hero, etc. Okay, so it's not about kings and queens. This is about the king, the inner king. Society is the Aquarian idea, the group. So one image that I had, when we talk about kings in classic fairy tales and stories and myth and so forth, there's always one king. Again, it's a pyramid model. Maybe there's two and they're exchanging kids or they're fighting or something like that. But there's not, you never see a ballroom full of kids. Or full of kings, sorry. You never see a ballroom full of kings. So to me, the idea is that yes, we do our individual self-search thing. Not a bad thing, or I wouldn't be doing what I do. I think that's a good thing. But you don't stop there. You don't say, okay, now I know who I am and I'm going to do my little thing. But now that I know who I am, I can step into that ballroom of other kings, people who are aware of their creative self, which is the sun. And we can all form a society of people who have woken up to who they are. That, to me, is a model and a myth worth wishing for, dreaming for, talking about. That's how those things, to me, can actually come together. Everybody get that? As an idea? Okay. So let's see where we are.
It's interesting that Obama's a Leo.
Yes. So it's 8 o'clock. Do you want to break or we continue? Excellent. My kind of group. So, Pluto into Capricorn. Different story now, but you all got the age of Aquarius, so you have something to take with from this that will help you understand this shift. And the more you think about it, the more you start wearing glasses that shows you that way of thinking, the more you'll understand a lot of things that are going on. So this is a different story now. This is getting more macro from the big macro background. Pluto went into Capricorn January the 25th of 2008. Last time that happened was in January. It was January 8th of 1762. And it will stay in Capricorn for, I don't know, 25 years or so. I forget, something like that. And this is a big shift. How do we understand what that means? Again, I can help you with a cheat sheet. That's on my website. So you will find on my website these words for Pluto. Regeneration, darkness, depth, power, mystery, psychology, detectives, research, healing, caves, blackness, rebirth, underworld, transformation, power, death, obsession, hidden gold, penetration, exploration, clandestine, total change, unique grind. It sounds a lot like an analysis session to me. But that's what Pluto is. Pluto is that. Pluto is definitely the analyst room, the terminus of transformation and change. Pluto is also the planet of healing. But Pluto tells us that there is no healing without ashes, that there is only a phoenix phenomenon, which is a great symbol for Pluto. The two famous symbols for Pluto are a phoenix coming out of the ashes or a butterfly coming out of a cocoon. They're both very classic Pluto symbols. Both have to do with death and rebirth. By far the most powerful planet that we know. And if any of you have ever had a Pluto transit, you know what I'm talking about. This is stuff that takes the carpet away from under your feet, This is the word I use for it. You feel like you're in a meat grinder. You lose control of whatever you thought you knew. That's a Pluto phenomenon. When Pluto is active in your chart, in your life, you know it. It's by far the planet you can avoid the least. So this is serious, real stuff. When it's Pluto stuff, it's real. So Pluto meets up with and moves into Capricorn. Well, what is Capricorn sign? That's a sign now. It's ruled by Saturn. But so the archetype is really Saturnine, but we can stay with Capricorn because I'm showing it in the sun. Again, they're actually interchangeable. It's just that I want you to think in planets because the planets are alive and the signs are not. But we can go here with just the key words, make it a little bit simpler. So words for Capricorn are tradition, melancholy, mastery, darkness, ends, hardness, ends and endings, hardness, construction, skeleton, establishment, architecture, coal, focus. Hardness shows up twice. Very hard. Time, business, wisdom, limits, maturity, borders, rules, hierarchy, discipline, leadership, walls, destination, frost, but most importantly, business. And structures. Those things that are firm and in one way. Guess what happened in 08? The housing market collapsed. The classic example. I mean, it's so textbook, it's almost silly. Total destruction, total collapse of, you know, the most solid structures we know, but not just that structure, also financial markets, etc. So I'm going to get into that a little bit more, but I want you to understand why that is such a significant shift that doesn't happen often. So when I teach astrology, I tell my students simply to do what I call word pairings. It's a great way to learn how planets interact. So let's say somebody has, you know, Saturn Sun conjunction in their natal chart. What does that mean? Well, you take keywords from Saturn, you take keywords from the Sun, you put them together, and you do what I call a word pairing. I'll show you how to do that. It's very simple. And it's a great and creative thing to do because there's no end. As long as you speak English, you can keep doing it for the rest of your life. or any other language, you can do it in that language. But the point is, it's a creative process. It's not defined. It's defined by your creativity and imagination to make sense of it. So we can take keywords from here, combine them from here, and I will show you a couple of quick combinations that I made to show you how suddenly you can make sense of what's been going on. There's a Pluto word, collapse of structures. Simple. Transformation of business. Simple. Death of mastery. Everybody's a dilettante with everything. I was talking about, you know, the heroes who are really not heroes. Paris Hilton is famous for being Paris Hilton. That's not really something she achieved. That's not any mastery. And actually, she's already out of the picture, but I used her in a way when she was, you know, important. Rebirth of traditional healing. That's another way. Tradition is a Saturn word. Healing is a Pluto word. Rebirth is a Pluto word. So you see how this works? When you get this way of thinking and memorize those keywords, you become an astrologer because you start to be an archetypal thinker because you start to think in those ways. It's very practical. You start to understand what combination, because nothing ever shows up alone. Things are always combined with others, and the skill is to have a very complex picture where there are thousands of combinations and to figure out what's important, distilling it. And that's how you start. This is the exact process.
Question.
Yes?
I was wondering, is this related to like the T-square?
No, we're going to get to that. That comes next, thank you. That's the transit. This is a planet entering a sign. So, I think I might have showed this last time. I still like this a lot, so I keep showing it. So, one way to think of these structures that are collapsing is of, well, showing a structure. And I put up here a couple of key concepts that are foundational to our existence as a community and as a culture and as a people. We have religion, science, education, medicine, capitalism, these are sort of keywords of things that one could say are the pillars that hold up our roof. Okay? So, I made these out of wood because what happens next is that there is a termite. And you start to see, and this is Pluto and Capricorn we're talking about, remember? Crumbling of structures. you start to see, and I didn't make up any of the stuff that I'm showing you. This is stuff that you can get out of the news anytime. In religion, what are we seeing? There is a great sense of loss of the sacred in religion, and people are, for the first time in American history, less than 50% of Americans call themselves Christians. That's the first. Never been before. In Europe, the numbers are in 1 and 2 and 3%. And I think in England, the church-going population is 0.5% now or something like that. I mean, the world is changing rapidly in that area. We're by far still the most church-going nation in the world, by far, except for Islamist extremist country. That's true. I mean, church-going, you know, religious house-going, you can say. So loss of the sacred is a big issue for people. So they don't go there anymore because it's not sacred to them. So they look for other things. Sex scandals in the churches certainly doesn't help. Not just in the churches, they're actually in any religious institution. You know, killing for God doesn't make sense for people anymore, which is still, you know, sort of doesn't make sense. And, you know, this whole thing that people are going from religion to spirituality, which is the new thing. People are saying, no, I'm not religious, I'm spiritual. Which means I don't belong to any sort of clan or group. I don't identify with any specific thing, but I have a need for something larger than myself, and that's what I call my spirituality. And I'm getting a little bit from here, a little bit from there. This is what people are doing all over the world. Because the need for spirit doesn't go away. Where people find it is changing. So religion, which is the organized way of doing that, is crumbling. I think I can make a very good case for that, especially with statistics pretty much coming. So science, maybe science will save us. Well, then you get things like, well, you know, pollution, the body burden, new babies being born with, you know, all kinds of chemicals in their blood system, even if you're organic and so forth. There's no sustainability, you know, cloning and ethics problems. My favorite example of the impotence of science happened in 2008 under Pluto, an incredibly Pluto image. Can anybody mention it? It's funny, these things were so inundated with news, we forgot that. It was a huge event. The Gulf spill.
Yeah.
I mean, Mother Earth, dark black oil gushing up from the darkness of the Earth, unstoppable by all these engineers. We're running like, well, my toy's broken, I don't know what to do. These top scientists in the world with their toy broken underwater. It was a phenomenal example of what I'm talking about, that science can be very impotent and suddenly not solve the problems you were expecting if you just fix anything. Example of that column crumbling. Education. You just have to, you know, educate people enough. Then you get to, you know, teaching to the test. My kids have gone through public school systems. I mean, it's sad. You know, it's unfair, racial bias, yada, yada. You've all heard it all. You know, we're not competing with the rest of the world despite everything that we're doing. We can't keep up. We're number, you know, so-and-so in the world in the rankings and this and that and the other. Clearly, we're not doing a good job of that. That's not going to save us. You're noticing that at the top it's getting less and less. So medicine, maybe it'll just be, you know, some medical breakthrough will make us all, you know, feel better. Then you get antibiotics overuse. When I did this a couple of years ago, I basically Googled $1 billion pharmacy lawsuits. And the first two that came up were by Oxetia and by Torrent. And I'm sure there's many more since then. So I rest my case. Affordability of medicine, this is getting better, but it's still a huge, huge issue. The non-allopathic medicine, people are spending more money out of their pocket to go and see who they want rather than an old guy. So you know all this stuff. But you see what I'm getting at. And finally, and I was shocked. I was shocked in 2008, I never thought this would actually happen in my lifetime, but in 2008, I remember listening to CNN and somebody say, well, maybe capitalism just doesn't work. I was shocked to hear that in the United States, the most capitalistic country in the world. So, you know, greed, debt, all those things that have also come out of a free market capitalist system. So, you know, what's left? This is what Pluto in Capricorn will do. It's that extreme. So, now we have this Aquarian age and the blowing up of the pyramid into this multi-points of whatever. We have this going on and we're not even done yet. So you start to get a sense of why people are a little freaked out. This is not about the Mayan calendar. Yes? About 20, 25 years, something like that. For a while. But it wasn't Capricorn, the United States was born. 1776. So if you've ever heard of a Saturn return, the United States is going to have its Pluto return when it's 248 years old. You do the math when that is. I think it's in 2020 somehow. That's an interesting phenomenon. It's a rebirth of some kind, you know. Okay, so now we have the first two things. We understand this one, and we understand this one, yes? Now we're going to get to transits and how to find it. We need a little bit of background for that, for those of you who aren't familiar with this language. And so we'll start out with this, you know, just noticing the movements of the planets. And I think there's the Geico guy, but I don't know that he's coming. But one thing that this sort of came to me a couple of months ago, and it's really never left my mind, but if you think about it, there's nothing else in human history, nothing else in human history and our understanding of the world, pick a culture, that is completely and 100% predictable except the movements of the planets. Nothing else. In the microorganism world, there are other things. I'm talking about before the last 20 years. Nothing. Which is why every culture, every major culture, has established some kind of astronomy / astrology, which were identical. Basically, trying to understand. So seasons were done after the movements of the sun and so forth. Plantings were done after the moon and so on. So people organize their lives according to the only thing that is actually organized in the universe. Everything else is pretty chaotic. You didn't know if this and this was going to happen. You might want it or believe it or so forth, but you did know that Mars was going to show up in the sky again there in, you know, 45 days.
Navigation.
Navigation, all of those things, exactly. Calendars, and so on. And it also made sense that the first gods were the planets. If you're a cave person, be politically correct, and, you know, and you're sitting in a dark cave, and you're dependent on just daylight to even get out and hunt something, you're pretty happy when the sun comes up over the horizon, and you don't really know, except experience, if the sun will come back. So are you going to worship the sun? Yes. So the first religion was sun worship. Makes perfect sense. So the structure and order here is important. It helps to understand why we turn to the planets. So again, the sun's path. I was talking about this before, now a picture to go with it. The ecliptic. Basically, if you're standing on the Earth, it appears to us as though the sun goes around us. Of course, in real time, this is the center, and we go around the sun. But it appears to us as though the sun goes around us and takes a year to go around the zodiac once. This is the path, the parent path of the sun through the sky. Now, if you study this, and you're an astronomer, and you study this in the ancient times or today, you notice that all the planets, except Pluto, who wasn't discovered then, but all the planets are moving within a limited distance from this ring. And actually, they go about, if you know anything about degrees, they go about 6 or 7 degrees above, 6 or 7 degrees below, so there's a belt here of about 13 degrees, it's about that wide in this picture. And all the planets are always moving within that belt. They never go outside of that belt. And that's the zodiac belt. So now if you take that belt, so we start out with the belt. Well, actually, those are the monuments to study. This is in India. This is an astronomical clock in, Prague. And so, you know, starting out with just seeing the planets as heavenly wanderers moving and doing strange things, you start to see some structure and order in these paths. And they're returning to the same place. This went on over hundreds of years, and people passed on their studies to others and so forth. So you started, okay, Saturn returned. Saturn took 30 years, but look, he's back again where he was 30 years ago. So then you have this belt, and again, as seen from the Earth, all the planet paths are within those 30 degrees of the sun's path. Okay? It's a belt. Next step was... Let's move this over here again. Next step was to break that belt into 12 pieces and then look at the star constellations in each piece and say, you know what? That thing looks a lot like a lion. Let's call that a lion. Let's call that Leo. That's how it was done over time. That's how we came up with the zodiac. It was a literalization and an observation. It was empirical.
Why 12?
Well, that's a good question, and there's a notion that there's a 13th plan in yada yada, and the 13th side, but 12 is an ancient number that is found in all kinds of places, the 12 tribes, you know, in the Bible, the 12 months, which comes from this. The part of it is I don't know the exact answer, but part of it has to do with numerology, and has to do with, for instance, the number 13, which is the combined number of, you know, the lucky or unlucky number, is actually a symbol for the 13th, which is the point in the middle. So the symbol for the sun, which is the circle, the point, is the essence of the other 12. And so there's 3 times 4, there's 3 plus, 3 times 4 makes the 12, 3 plus 4 makes the 7 planets. So there's myth and magic in the numerology that goes into those things that I'm not fully up to, but that's where it comes from. But anyway, it's divided into 12. It's a good question. I'm actually curious. I'm going to find out. And then the other, you know, there's your others. And so now we have that a planet at any given moment is going to show up in front of a piece of that zodiac. So when you say I have Venus in Libra, it means the planet Venus was in front of the sign of, was in front of the sign of Libra at the moment of your birth. Now you understand how charts are done. That's exactly it. And then, so now we, instead of planets, we just paint the symbols. So you have the sun there, now you have the symbol for the sun. And then you flatten it. And now here you actually have, these are 30 frames, so this is 1 month's worth of actual movements of the planets in the sky showing the symbols. So you see the moon goes around once, as seen from the Earth. Here you actually see this thing going, starts again, this thing going backwards, Mercury retrograde. Just means going backwards. And so you see that's the actual movement. And you were born at when this was all moving, but we just froze the clock for a moment. And we took a snapshot, and that's your birth chart. So from this, you then get to the actual flat, you know, flat symbolic picture, which has no more movement. A moment frozen in time, and what I'm just showing here is that the planets now are also relating to each other in certain ways. It's called aspects. And so I think of this as a stage within us with characters. These are archetypes, parts of us. If you want to use, you know, sort of popular psycho talk, you can say that's your inner lover, and that's your inner thinker, and then you've got your inner creative artist or whatever. This idea that we are people inside is a very old one, to the point that we say part of me wants to do this, but another part of me wants to do that. Talking to yourself, that's literal for me. Those are the characters talking to each other. Those dialogues can be seen as the relationships between the characters on your stage, in your chart. What's the story? When I look at a chart, I want to know, you know, who's kissing whom, who's slapping whom, who's stabbing whom, what's the drama? It's a drama, which is actually a line from one of Jung's books. And the inner life is more like a drama that we're not aware of. And not only do the planets relate, but they can relate like this, or they can relate like this. And the difference is just intensity. And we need this when we go to the next step. That's why I'm giving you this little extra piece. And how that actually happens practically is that they're really, if they're exactly 180 degrees apart, then it's thick. But what if they're 179 degrees or 83 degrees? Does that still count? And yes, it does to within a certain degree. But when they're exact, it's much more interesting to me because that means much more than the thinner line. It's intensity. So the difference is two people, you know, giving each other the finger or slapping each other. It's a difference of intensity. Okay? Because that's tension. Solid lines in my charts are always tension, so it doesn't matter if it's in color. Solid lines are tension, dashed or dotted lines are harmony.
So you're saying that there's a geometric angular relationship between planets,
yes,
in the solar system?
Yes, that can be measured at any time in this model, where we put ourselves in the middle. Exactly. And so different degrees, different angles mean different things. So that's where you start to get into the interpretation. So 90 degrees apart is tension, and 180 degrees apart is, I'm simplifying here, is tension. 120 degrees and 60 degrees is harmony, to simplify. Then there's a bunch of other little stuff, but that pretty much says it. And you'll see this when we get to the next. So now we go back to our picture, do the one month, and now you start to see relationships forming every day, different ones. See how that goes? So again, you were born in one of these moments, and then those relationships are, if you want, embedded in you. There's a wonderful quote by Pythagoras that as we're born, we are stamped by the heavens, almost like wax. It's a beautiful image. So you see, there's different things happening all the time. And this is daily now. This actually happens hourly. And then you come, this is the chart for this lecture. So, you can see what's going on from that chart. It's basically the same thing I just showed you, just with a little, a little prettier, but same idea. So there's all kinds of relationships and so on. So that's the step now from just observing planets moving crazily in the sky to an actual chart. I just showed you the steps in, 10 slides or so, simplifying it. So now when we look at the planets, there are different kinds of planets, so we can organize them a little bit. Here's all of them. And by the way, we call the sun and the moon planets in astrology, even though they're technically not. But that's just convention. So there's 10 planets here. And we separate them out by the most simple thing, which is, can you see them? Can't see these. So here we're down back again to the sacred number of 7. You can see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. We can see these 7. And Saturn is the outermost planet, the furthest planet that we can see with the naked eye. So Saturn was always... So now you get into the symbolism of limits, endings, finality, those things that I was talking about. How do we come up with these things? Well, like that. How do we know Mars is about warrior and heat and so forth? Well, Mars is red. So that's how things start, and observing and watching. So you have that. So we can actually draw the line, literally, with Saturn. But Saturn is sort of the edge. So when we're talking about things, phenomena that are going on in the world, collective experiences, which is what we're talking about tonight. What the heck is going on? Or as my kids say, WTF. That is, you get that from these planets, because these are the what we call the transcendental, trans-Saturnian planets. Trans means beyond. So they're called transcendental or trans-Saturnian planets. They're invisible to the naked eye. They have to do with the collective. And these have to do with the personal experiences. Okay? So we could start to say some interesting things. So if you in your natal chart have, let's say, this planet and this planet, I'm being vague, so you don't say, wait a minute, that's me. But if you have a planet from over there and a planet from over here standing exactly next to each other, you are personally more connected to the collective than someone else. Simple. Not about good or bad, but that's an explanation of what that might mean. Yes? Get it? If you have a planet from here and a planet from here that are standing in the same place in your chart, you are personally more tuned in, personally, personal planets, with a collective. And some people are. The ones who want to change the world or are totally tuned in or want to be reporters or explorers and figure out how it's all put together. And people don't care about that at all. Simple explanation right there about how to read that. Yes? Okay. So we're interested for tonight, because we're talking about collective phenomena, we're interested in these three. So now I'm going to show you one of the coolest things in the development of technology, which is the following. I'm going to show you what I showed you before. This is basically a chart. We're going to make a chart for, let's start in, let's do one from, let's say, March 1, 2010. It doesn't matter where we do it, but let's just do the Seattle paper here. And take a look at that chart. So see, I'm only showing the outer planets. Let me show it bigger. I'm not showing all of them. We're only interested in the inner planets. So there's your chart, right? So I'm actually adding Saturn, because as we look at the collective, Saturn is a borderline planet, if you want. Saturn is important, too. And I'm going to show you some examples where Saturn is interesting, so it's worth looking into. So we've got Uranus, Neptune, Pluto, outer planets, and Saturn. That's all we're looking at. We don't know where the others are. We don't care. Date of this exact picture of the heavens over Seattle was March of 2010. And here's where it gets cool. We now do this. I used to draw charts by hand. It took me 4 hours to do one chart. I'm not kidding. This is, watch this. This is every click, every little moment is a day. And so now, you start to see relationships coming and going over time. Outer planet relationships that are tensional change history. They're rare. And we're going to get into some of them. So, you were talking about the T-squared. It shows up here. I'm just going to let this run for a minute. Just get mesmerized by it, because this is... We're still in 2010. Let me turn this a little so you can see the date. This is December 2010. Now we're in January of 2011.
You got this online?
No. April 2011. May 2011. There's the T. That's called the T-squared, which is a lot of tension between Uranus, Saturn, and Pluto. And now we're looking at the Pluto-Uranus square. This is the biggie. That started in the summer of 2011. That goes on from 2010 through 2015, approximately. Really 2012 through 2015, if you use an narrower. Then it goes away a little bit. These things come and go. Why? Because they're retrograde. So they come closer, then they move apart again, and these kind of things. And that is harmony, the blue and dotted one, that's harmony. But with outer planets, my teacher always said, with outer planets, it doesn't really matter if you're talking about harmony or stress because it's the outer planets, especially when it involves Pluto.
What's the date now?
July 28th, 2012. So we're still in the summer of 2012. You see that was the... that's the summer. This is October. Now we're just exactly now. November and so forth. So this goes on. Now, we're not going to interpret all this.
Look, it kept going after December.
Yes. That's a miracle.
We're saved.
Okay. So we're not going to, discuss all the details of all the plans we're going to get. What is that? Don't want that either.
Laura.
Yes.
Do you have keywords that you assign to those geometric angular relationships?
Good question. Do I have that? No, I don't, but that's a good idea. I might do that someday. No, it's a really good idea, thank you. But I do have a description of which are the harmonious and which are not and so forth on my website with the angles and all that. Again, cheat sheets galore, help yourself. So this one is already over. This one is really interesting in the last election. I'm not going to get into this too much except with one example that's just so beautiful and it has to be shown. And these things I'm going to get into a little bit. The Uranus and Aries was the Arab Spring. I mean, that exactly. Uranus, again, you saw what Uranus was about. Basically, Uranus is this, pardon my French. I'm glad that's on video. But that's Uranus, right? So Uranus and Aries, the most militant sign. I don't need to say more. You saw the Arab Spring, all of us did. And it's still going on that, Uranus is still in Aries. It's a 7-year cycle for Uranus and Aries. Uranus Pluto square, this is the big one. Because that is where, I'm going to get into that a little bit, but first I'll show you the sometimes these things are just very literal. And I actually tweet about the stuff if you're interested. Sometimes I tweet about, not often, but if something is just really obvious that's going on in the world archetypally, and it's easily explained by what's going on in the heavens, I do tweet about that. Some people want to know. So instead of calling, I say, follow the tweet. It's easier. But that way you get a sense. So this was a time. Saturn rules structure, order, the past, tradition, is a great Saturn word and so forth, versus Uranus, which is everything I've described to you. The most beautiful picture of this was in the middle of exact transit in maybe 08 or 09 on Time magazine. And it was called The Future of Work. Remember, Saturn rules work and business. Here's your traditional guy. He's got a big class ring on. He's got his briefcases. On the top you see the new guy, multiracial, the future of work. This is the split, Saturn-Uranus. You can't say it more literally, more, perfectly. And so it says you throw away the briefcase. You're not going to, I can't even read it. So
Okay, but something, you're not going to work in the traditional way, you know, you don't have your benefits anymore, kissing goodbye, however, here's all the things you do have in the new world. It's a different structure. So if you don't like it, it's still happening. Right? So I'm not making this up. I read the world that I translated back into the language that I understand and try to help people understand it as well from this perspective. It's just a way of looking at things. But this is real for a lot of people. So I'm showing you a way to understand it. Again, here we see Uranus and Aries, the Arab Spring, Bin Laden caught, strong Pisces, and so forth. But the Pluto-Uranus, Uranus-Pluto cycle is really an interesting one. What does that really mean? The last time we had Uranus-Pluto in any kind of relationship of tension was in the alignment. Here's how rare these things are. Out-of-planet alignments, where they stand in the same place like that, happens. There were two of them in the 20th century. They're rare. Okay? And I'm not going to talk about the other one, I'm going to talk about this one. Pluto and Uranus, the two most revolutionary, transforming, forget about everything you ever knew before, planets aligned once in the 20th century between 65 and 67, need I say more? So you've got all these Uranian themes. You have women's rights, black rights, anti-war movement, and all the other stuff. Right? That was, and not just in the States, there was a lot of stuff going on in China, in Russia, that we just know most about here. So that's the last time that happened. Now, so we're talking about angular in relation to this is tense. So what we look at as astrologers is not when are they going to be happy together, but when is the next time they spar? When is the next time they get into tension, which is the next aspect between these two planets is a square, and they're 90 degrees apart, which is what we're experiencing between 2012 and 2015. It's over here. It's moved signs from this sign here in the zodiac. They move slowly. They're very slow planets. So 2012, 2015, you have Pluto in Capricorn. I already discussed that. But not just in Capricorn, Pluto's also squaring Uranus. This is big stuff. This is really big stuff. So what does it mean? Well, again, we go to our tools. We go to keywords. And I've done that for you here. But some of the phenomena to me that are clearly explainable by this aspect in the sky is... this is a revolutionary quality, which we have again now. In the 60s, we had Dylan, which was revolutionary music, another field. I haven't just talked about the bad stuff, you know, but there's also, or in our time now. But in those days, this was revolutionary, great new stuff that was coming out. There's often a breakthrough in science, point of the pill, which changed the whole sexual revolution, which also happened then. These things aren't, you know, within a month. These things are periods of time. So the 60s had to do, you know, the Beatles, which was a completely phenomenal. What was so interesting about the Beatles? Because the Beatles were a group. They were a group. It wasn't one hero. It wasn't Elvis with a band. It was a group. Four individuals. You can argue if George was supposed to be there, but there were four people. There were four people in a band together. That is a very Aquarian symbol. Okay? And women's rights, of course. The power to the people is what belongs in this cycle. You can go to the 60s or you can go to now. Now we have things like Assange and WikiLeaks and Wikipedia and so forth. Power to the people. WikiLeaks is an incredibly powerful tool. I mean, governments around the world are trying. It's never happened before. There's never been that kind of pushback. And again, the internet works both ways, because on the one end, we can have this kind of power, we meaning we the people, can have this kind of power over governments, and at the same time, thanks to the internet, governments can have a camera at every corner and watch you, and watch what you're downloading and where you're Googling. Did you know that every Google search you've ever done is recorded? That's a fact. So these are scary things too. So it goes both ways. Again, common sense, understanding what we're talking about helps to make intelligent decisions.
Is it recorded in connection with your IP address?
Or is it recorded? I believe so, yes. No, as not for statistics, no, with your IP address, yes. So with you. Well, that's the way it's justified. But it's my understanding that now, you know, that that's what's happening. So it's just to be aware of these things.
On the start page, through web processing or...
Yeah, that's what I said.
Okay, so power to the people. The whole grassroots idea is a real 60s idea. And by the way, a lot of kids at Occupy were saying, you know, this is our 60s. That was one of the lines. So, and it doesn't really matter what you believe about these movements, or if you're for them or against them. That's not the point. The point is to understand the phenomenon. Tea Party is a against the system party. I happen to think they're idiots, but besides that, that it is a movement that says we don't want what's going on. It's wrong. And it had a lot of power. Occupy, you know, sort of come and gone a little bit, but it was a huge movement around the globe. This is a line from my friend Ray that I borrowed from him, that I just think is brilliant to describe these times, what he calls the breaking in of the untamable. That's a really good description of Pluto Uranus. I called it one of my lectures that, just because it's a great line. That's really what we're talking about. This is untamable energy, and it's breaking into all of our consciousnesses, it's breaking into the world, it's breaking in, it's breaking out, it's breaking in. That's what we're dealing with when we're dealing with Pluto and Uranus. You can go back in history and look at these cycles. That's what happens. The last time, the last square before 1967 was in 32, I believe, which was the rise of the right.
And that is the end of the recording. This recording was made on DVD, and it included some images. The DVD is available in the library at the C.G. Jung Society, Seattle. The copyright is C.G. Jung Society, Seattle, and the speaker. All rights reserved. No copying, please.